Good afternoon and welcome to the lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International. It is Friday, the 11th of April 2025, and we are on to program number 1354 of the lunchroom. I'm your host, Calix George Jr. Now, in addition to Radio 101.1 FM, you can also get us at our website, rcistlucia.com, and we are also streaming live on Facebook. You just have to search for the official page of Radio Caribbean International. If you want to call in to tell us what's on your plate in just a bit, the number to do that on is 452-3046. Again, 452-3046. And you can also reach us via WhatsApp. That is 724-0008. Again, 724-0008. Now, some history for today. In the year 1783, hostilities formally ceased in the American Revolutionary War, after the Continental Congress proclaimed the cessation of arms against His Britannic Majesty. In the year 1840, on this day, Napoleon Bonaparte abdicated unconditionally and was exiled to the island of Elba in the Mediterranean. 1868 saw in Japan the abolition of the shogunate. 1955, on this day, chartered Air India plane Kashmir Princess was bombed and crashed into the South China Sea in a failed assassination attempt on Zhou Enlai by the Kuomintang secret agent. In 1968, on this day, U.S. President Lyndon Baines Johnson signed the 1968 Civil Rights Act. 1979, on this day, April 11th, Tanzanian army captured Kampala, the capital of Uganda, forcing Ugandan dictator Idi Amin to flee into exile into Libya. And on this day in 2015, Barack Obama and Raul Castro met in Panama. That was the first meeting of U.S. and Cuban heads of state since the Cuban Revolution. We now head to our dish of the day. The daily dish is brought to you the kind compliments of our good friends at Tiles Plus.
One test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need tests for your balcony. Come down to Tiles Plus, satisfaction guarantee. Tiles Plus, Tiles Plus, Tiles Plus. Big test with unbeatable cost. Customer service, A plus, did all kind of tests. Come down to Tiles Plus. We also got glassware and vanity. Boss, boss, you'll see. Come down, don't mind nobody. We got the best tiles on island. Trust me. We are located Land Street in Castries, Bosses, Jou Grozy Lakes, and Slack Street in Dufort. Telephone number 453-7939. Tiles Plus.
Serving now, the Daily Dish.
And welcome back to the lunchroom here at Radio Caribbean International. And of course, the past week or so, in fact, if you thought back to last week, Friday, we were dealing with a situation where the world was in a very worrying position. And that was after 2 days of slumps in the global markets, and with quite a lot of concern, lots of wealth effectively evaporating from those stock exchanges and leaving many to wonder what would in fact happen next. Of course, we've seen somewhat of a turnaround with respect to the matter of tariffs, but at the same time, still lots and lots of uncertainty abounds. And the matter of course, the trade war between the world's two largest economies is still something that certainly we are monitoring. And this entire matter sort of started back in February of this year, where Trump raised tariffs on all Chinese goods, and that was on February the 1st of this year. Now, China retaliated by putting a 10% tariffs on certain products, specifically natural gas, coal and farm machinery. And so, in fact, it was a bit more tempered than that as compared to the United States. But by the 10th of February, the United States then introduced a 25% tariff on steel and aluminium. And by March the 3rd, they raised tariffs on China to 20%, and that's on all goods. The Chinese then sort of retaliated on March the 4th, the following day, and they then placed tariffs of 10% on U.S. Food and agricultural products. So you note that the Chinese were being relatively restrained in their approach, and they did not go all out for all U.S. imports into China with respect to that ongoing tariff situation. They targeted first energy and some equipment, farm machinery, and then following the second rise, or third action really, by the U.S. Over the past couple of months now, since February the 1st, by raising their tariff to 20% on all goods, then we saw that response coming from China. The U.S. then went on to include on March the 26th 25% tariffs on cars and car parts coming out of China. Now, you would note that, in fact, there were already some tariffs that were already in existence with respect to China. And part of that, of course, was to sort of protect the U.S. EV car sector, dominated, of course, by the likes of Tesla, owned by Mr. Elon Musk. But, of course, this step again being taken on March the 26th. By April the 2nd, as part of what were then seen as this worldwide reciprocal tariffs regime that the United States was introducing, it went even further this time by raising the tariff level, that threshold, for China by an additional 34%. And so you recall that there were suggestions that this was those tariffs were somehow being generous to countries, because these countries were in fact taxing or placing import tariffs of astounding rates on the United States of America. It all came to be untrue, and effectively that was simply not the case, right? I mean, many countries who in fact had no tariffs at all on the U.S. or very marginal tariffs, they in fact were suggesting otherwise. And that was all based on the balance of trade with other countries around the world. And so, as a result of that, the decision being taken to slap an additional 34% tariffs on China, that happened just last week, on the 2nd of April. China responded on the 4th of April, and they applied their own 34% tariff, which meant that at that point, the U.S. had 54% tariff set versus China's 34%. Well, we heard the sentiments of Mr. Donald Trump, and he suggested that China was being unfair to the markets, and they were being jittery, and they were retaliating, and as if they should not, as if reciprocity was not the name of the game, according to what he was in fact suggesting in the first instance, claiming that he was bringing forward reciprocal tariffs. Well, China eventually, as I said, had raised their rate to to 34%. Then Mr. Trump came further, and he raised the U.S. rates by another 50% for goods. And that happened on April the 8th. And then the following day, China responded by raising their tariffs to 84%. And on the 9th, he then raised tariffs on China even further by another 41%, bringing it up to 145%. And of course, China eventually responded on that same time. I think they brought it up to 84%. I think now they've brought theirs up to a total of 125% on U.S. imports to China. So undoubtedly, there is this is exceedingly prohibitive for trade between the world's largest economies, the world's perhaps one can even argue significantly dependent economies. At the end of it all, the United States does have a trade deficit with China. It is the largest deficit that they have of all countries. And that amount is in the vicinity of $270 billion U.S. dollars. And the only other country, the next highest trade deficit that the U.S. carries is with its neighbor to the south. That is the United States of Mexico, which has a $157 billion surplus against the United States, the U.S. carrying a deficit against them. So certainly, when you look at the extent and of the current situation, it is very, very, very extreme. And one can only wonder what is going to happen next in terms of that entire situation. China exports the value of about $400 billion worth of goods to the United States of America. The United States of America exports to China the equivalent of about $131 billion dollars, and so certainly a significant amount of trade between these countries, and you can well appreciate therefore the significant challenge that is at play with these countries. In fact, it is easy to say that the U.S. is, I believe that China would be the U.S.'s largest trading partner with an export market for its goods, despite the fact, of course, that you are seeing a significant deficit there. I think the only one actually would have been that's larger than them would be Mexico and Canada. So they would be number three, I believe, that of their trade with China. So it is certainly an interesting state of play as to whether it, in fact, is going to shift or change anytime soon. Who is going to be blinking first is anyone's guess. We have seen, of course, Donald Trump having to blink and pull back on his actions with respect to that of the rest of the world, with the has been described as a pause. Many people believe that it will be effectively permanent action, that perhaps nobody will remember any of this in 90 days for the most part, that Donald Trump waged a trade war with the rest of the world for about a week. And it, of course, will be up to the world to see how things continue to pan out. In the case of the European Union, they are also looking at potentially taking certain actions with respect to responses as well on U.S. products. Of course, we did hear from Mr. Elon Musk. He was asking for effectively what would be a free trade area between the United States and Europe, as to, of course, whether that is going to come out of the current environment. It is highly, highly unlikely. Coming home to St. Lucia, regarding some things happening in the news here, an announcement regarding a new U.S. $20 million resilience project for St. Lucia being funded by the World Bank. And that was announced earlier on today. That story coming from the St. Lucia Times. And it reads as follows. The World Bank has approved a U.S. $20 million disaster risk management development policy financing project for St. Lucia to enhance the nation's capacity to prepare for and respond to natural hazards and health-related crises. A key feature of the project is the inclusion of a catastrophe deferred drawdown option known as CAT-DDO, providing St. Lucia with a rapid access line of credit to support timely and effective responses once an emergency is declared. Located in the hurricane belt, St. Lucia is increasingly vulnerable to extreme weather events, including hurricanes, floods, landslides, and droughts, many of which are intensifying. Estimated annual losses from hurricanes alone amount to nearly U.S. $9.5 million in damage to the island's building stock, representing approximately 0.4% of its 2023 GDP. With nearly half of the population living within 5 kilometers of the coastline, the risk of people and property is rising. These hazards not only strain government finances, but also jeopardize key economic sectors such as tourism and agriculture, while disproportionately affecting the most vulnerable. In response to these escalating risks, the CAT-DDO offers St. Lucia immediate liquidity in times of disaster. To access this contingent line of credit, St. Lucia has completed a targeted set of policy reforms structured around two main pillars: strengthening physical and data infrastructure for climate and disaster risk management, and improving the country's financial readiness to respond to future shocks. As part of the first pillar, the government took steps to update and implement physical planning regulations that promote safer land development and will ensure that new infrastructure and urban expansion are guided by risk-informed standards. The second pillar focuses on increasing St. Lucia's fiscal resilience. The government has adopted public asset management regulations, the public inventory, to evaluate and monitor the condition and vulnerability of public infrastructure. At the same time, a new disaster risk financing strategy was adopted, outlining financial instruments and policies that can be used to better manage the economic fallout of disasters. These reforms will complement national efforts already underway to strengthen resilience through better planning, regulation, and financial preparedness. Quote, the high costs of recovery and reconstruction following a natural disaster strains public finances, contributes to increased debt, and limits countries' ability to invest in development and higher living standards, said Lilia Burinichich, World Bank Division Director for the Caribbean. Quote, this project helps St. Lucia address these challenges by advancing key reforms and providing rapid access to financing in the event of a disaster. It also reduces the need for costly emergency borrowing and enables faster, more fiscally responsible recovery, benefiting all St. Lucians, end quote. St. Lucia joins other Caribbean nations that are using CAT-DDOs to build financial buffers and institutional capacity to handle increasing disaster risk, including St. Vincent and the Grenadines, Grenada, Jamaica, Dominica, and Barbados. The project is financed by the International Development Association, the arm of the World Bank Group, which supports low-income countries and small island economies. Technical assistance was provided for the policy reforms, with financial support from the European Union through the EU Resilient Caribbean Program and the Canada Caribbean Resilience Facility, both managed by the Global Facility for Disaster Recovery and Reduction and the Caribbean Strengthening Fiscal Risk Management Trust Fund. Contributing countries include the United Kingdom, Germany, France, Japan, Canada, Netherlands, European Commission, Norway, Australia, and the United States. Well, that's our dish of the day. And at this point, we're going to head across to take in our weather report.
This has been The Daily Dish.
One test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need test for your balcony. Come down to Test Plus, satisfaction guarantee. Test Plus, Test Plus, Test Plus. Big test with unbeatable cost. Customer service, A+. Did all kind of tests. Come down to Test Plus. We also got gas, and vanity. Boss, boss, you'll see. Come down, don't mind nobody. We got the best test on island. Trust me. We are located Land Street in Castries, Bosses, you Grozy Lakes, and Slack Street in Viewfort. Telephone number 453-7939.
Island style, oh, yeah. We got the time to make you go, oh. We got the time to make you say, yeah. We'll have to make the right choice. Island style, whoa. We got the time that will make you happy. Island style, oh yeah. We make your dream come alive in Island style.
We have tiles and tin sets, pieces and ground. Need to start the house out for the best price and the latest style. Take a little drive down to Island Style Car.
We got the time to make you go. Oh. We got the time to make you say, yeah. Quality, price, service, choice. It's all an Island Style.
Visit us at our showrooms in Belarusa, Rodney Bay, on the John Crompton Highway, Castries, and behind Ruby's Gas Station on the Library Viewfort Highway. Or call us on 450-452 or 453 Tile. Island Style, Tile and Bath. When you think tile, think Island Style.
This is Radio Caribbean International. It's now time for the weather news.
And on Solar Pulse 1.1, it's now time for your weather forecast as of 12 noon today, presented by Island Style Talambath. The forecast for St. Lucia Valley for the next 24 hours, winds will be blowing from between the east and east-southeast, near 20 miles per hour or 31 kilometers per hour. The weather fair to partly cloudy and hazy with a few brief showers. The forecast for the Los Angeles, partly cloudy and hazy with a few brief showers. And the weather summary, the Atlantic High Pressure System will continue to generate moderate easterly winds across the Eastern Caribbean region during the forecast period. Weak, unstable conditions in the atmosphere over the region will trigger a few brief showers over the Los Angeles during the next 24 hours. And this was your weather forecast as of 12 noon today, presented by Island Style Talambath.
This has been RCI's weather news. For more information, call the weather hotline at 454-3452. RCI 101 number 1.
Island Style. We got the time to make you go. We got the time to make you say, yeah.
Pieces and ground. Everything you need to start the house out. For the best price and the latest style. Take a little drive down to Island Style Car.
We got the time to make you go. Oh. We got the time to make you say, yeah. Quality, price, service, choice. It's all an Island Style.
Visit us at our showrooms in Belarusa, Rodney Bay, on the John Crompton Highway, Castries, and behind Ruby's Gas Station on the Library Viewfort Highway. Or call us on 450-452 or 453 Tile. Island Style, Tile and Bath. When you think tile, think Island Style.
And welcome back to our program here at the Lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International. Now, of course, if you want to call in to tell us what's on your plate today, the number to do so is 4523046. Again, 4523046. And you can also reach us at our WhatsApp number, and that is 724-0008. Again, 724-0008. Now, of course, we've been looking at the continued situation with respect to China and the United States of America, and it is likely not to end well if no party is deciding that they are not going to back down. There's been a lot of speculation as to who can come out the worst in this entire situation. And of course, although some may say that China perhaps needs the United States because it's the world's largest economy, the markets are there, it needs to be able to export to the United States, but it certainly has also been looking and over the past number of years to broaden its reach and scope and expand its trading partnerships. And of course, there is a lot of speculation that had the United States continued along the line, in particular of ostracizing pretty much all the rest of the world, that it was actually going to be a very, very worrying situation for them in the long term, because it would have allowed then for those countries to then look for other markets and other trading partners, inclusive of that of China. So certainly China has some very interesting advantages, including the fact that it also has considerable reserves, foreign reserves, and it has been building up those reserves in large measure as well through the purchase of U.S. Treasury papers, bonds, and Treasury bills. So it is, and that has been part of the suggestion as to whether, in fact, China will engage in an approach where it decides to, in fact, cash out on a number of these bonds would certainly mean for the U.S. government and its means of operating a real challenge in terms of its fiscal position. So very, very interesting state of play. There is an article on this matter regarding the trade war, and it's entitled, A U.S.-China Trade War Could Be Catastrophic. What is Trump's Endgame Strategy? Written by Stephen Collinson at CNN. And it reads as follows. The fast worsening trade war between the United States and China, the planet's premier geopolitical powers, whose economies are intricately entwined, threatens to wreak severe damage on both nations and will send shockwaves worldwide. Since President Donald Trump launched this potential cataclysm, it's fair to ask whether he's got a strategy and how he sees the endgame. As usual, Trump is improvising. His stunning escalation in tariffs on China this week didn't follow any meaningful formula. He's acting, as he always does, like a real estate shark, raising the stakes to intolerable levels to seek leverage. It's the latest manifestation of the madman theory, by which Trump conjures the most extreme of circumstances to try to spook his opponents. Perhaps it will work, and China, not eager to wreck an economy that no longer pumps out eye-popping growth numbers, will rush to the table. Many China experts believe that Beijing doesn't want to go to the brink any more than Trump does. The potential consequences of a full-on trade war for both sides might leave them with no option but to step back. But after Trump's latest raising of the stakes on Thursday, when he confirmed tariffs on Chinese goods would now hit 145%, Chinese President Xi Jinping hit back, pushing duties on U.S. goods entering China to 125%. She said that China was, quote, not afraid. There were also new signs that Trump's team doesn't appreciate the factors in Beijing driving China's calculations. CNN's Kylie Atwood reported that the administration had privately warned the Chinese not to respond to the U.S. tariffs and that she should request a call with Trump, a source familiar with the discussion said. Such a move would have implied that the Chinese president was a supplicant to the U.S. president, who started the standoff, an intolerable possibility for Beijing. The risks are massive. Quote, "We're now in a huge trade war with China, and the tariffs that have been imposed on China are what I would call prohibitive," former Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen told Zane Asher and Bianna Goldbrigger on CNN International Thursday. Quote, "They're going to result in massive impacts on the United States and the global economy. No one knows where these policies are headed," end quote. Trump's tactics assume that the threat of massive consequences will force China into negotiations, as happened in his first term when the two sides reached a trade agreement that was never fully implemented, even before the COVID-19 pandemic effectively shut down U.S. relations with Beijing. But coercing China could backfire, given its vast economic weight and its sensitivity to slights from Western powers it views as trying to thwart its rise. China's population is unlikely to respond well to threats after years of nationalistic policymaking and propaganda aimed at superseding the United States. Trump insisted Thursday that his personal chemistry with Xi would be decisive. He's been, in a true sense, quote, he's been a friend of mine for a long period of time, end quote, he said at a cabinet meeting. Trump often reminisces fondly about a visit by Xi to his Mar-a-Lago resort during his first term, when the two munched on, quote, "the most beautiful piece of chocolate cake that you've ever seen," end quote. And he informed his stunned guests about military strikes he just ordered in Syria. Cake diplomacy is unlikely in Trump's second term. Chumminess isn't really Xi's style. China prefers negotiations to be conducted in grueling, lower-level formal diplomacy. Leader meetings are highly scripted, far from the scenario of big guys getting together in a room and thrashing it out that Trump prefers. Quote, "President Xi Jinping is not a negotiator. His role is not to be engaged in a trade negotiation. Instead, it's the working level, the bureaucrats, the functionaries negotiate the deal," said Zhongyan Zolui, a senior fellow for China Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. Quote, "From that perspective, I do see some short-term logistical challenges, even though the intent to de-escalate may still be there in China," end quote. There's also no chance China will expose its leader to a freewheeling Oval Office session when anything can happen. Just ask Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky after his dressing down earlier this year, or Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who was surprised this week when Trump said he might not lift tariffs in a return for the Jewish state eliminating its trade deficit with the U.S. But as the global trade war quickly evolved over the past several days, the administration hatched a new idea: use trade agreements with allies to isolate and pressure China. This seems a long shot, however, since the president has alienated nations that he'd need for this, including Canada and those in the European Union. America's friends have decided the U.S. is an unreliable partner and they'll have to go their own way. CNN's Alania Treen asked Trump to identify his endgame with China on Thursday. The president shook his head when asked if he was waiting for Xi to blink and couldn't say how he'd resolve the showdown. Quote, "Look, for years we've been ripped off and taken advantage of by China and others, in all fairness, but that's the big one," Trump said. "This is an astonishingly blasé attitude given the ramifications of a conflict between the world's largest economies that could have incalculable consequences. Why a trade war between the U.S. and China could be so damaging? One reason, a trade war between the U.S. and China could be so disruptive, is that the two economies have become so intertwined. Years of integration have helped both countries. American consumers have enjoyed cheap access to clothes, shoes, electronics such as iPhones, and other consumer goods, which has raised the middle class quality of life. China has used U.S. trade to expand manufacturing and to lift tens of millions of its people out of poverty. The profits have been pumped into high-tech industries and China's growing military. In the United States, the downside of this arrangement has been that cheap goods from China have hammered U.S. industries, from steelmaking in the Rust Belt to furniture manufacturing in North Carolina. And the long-time rationale behind the U.S.'s China policy that economic development would inevitably loosen the grip of Beijing's communist leaders did not pan out. China hawks in Washington now argue that the U.S. effectively built its 21st century superpower enemy with its own addiction to cheap consumer goods. Foreign policy analysts used to argue that the enmeshed nature of the China-U.S. relationship would provide a firewall against military conflict. But now the talk is about decoupling, the process of deintegrating the American and Chinese economies, the two powers on either side of the world's most dangerous geopolitical rivalry. If trade dies out between the U.S. and China, the consequences will be painful. The price of goods that form a vital part of American life could shoot up. This could fuel inflation, worsening the quality of life for millions and hurting consumer confidence, which in turn could slip the U.S. into a recession. In China, a prolonged trade war could particularly hurt small businesses, which are the engine of its economy. Unemployment could rise, which is always a concern for a nation obsessed with keeping a lid on unrest. Western observers often forget that while China's authoritarian system suppresses dissent, it does have its own form of internal politics that its leaders cannot ignore. This means that a trade war between the U.S. and China could become a grueling test of which populists can take the most economic pain. The magnitude of the potential conflict has U.S. officials casting around for a strategy. There is one approach that would leverage American strength and global power, and that might have a chance of building pressure on Beijing to act on consistent U.S. complaints about market access, theft of intellectual property, industrial espionage, and other issues. There's only one problem. It would conflict with Trump's America First mantra. In an interview with Fox Business on Wednesday, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent pointed out that U.S. allies such as Japan, South Korea, and India would soon be in trade talks with Washington, as would Vietnam. Everyone is coming to the table, and basically China is surrounded, he said. Bessent added that a topic of talks should be a joint goal. Quote, How do we get China to rebalance? That is the big win here. Kevin Hassett, the head of Trump's National Economic Council, said Thursday that Trump's cabinet meeting would discuss whether the U.S. should make trade deals with allies to create a united anti-China front. America's power has long been multiplied by its alliance system, a key advantage that China does not enjoy. A common approach between the trading nations of North America and Europe would be hard for Beijing to ignore. Yet, everything that Trump has done since he arrived back in the Oval Office has been designed to destroy this group of like-minded democracies. Several times this week, he dissed the European Union. Quote, "The EU has been very tough over the years. I always say it was formed to really do damage to the United States in trade." End quote. In fact, U.S. policy for years, despite many trade disputes, has been to support a strong EU as an American ally bloc of prosperity, unity, and democracy in a continent that was the epicenter of the bloodiest wars in European history. Fierce anti-Europe sentiment elsewhere in the administration might also be a problem. Vice President J.D. Vance revealed his distaste for the continent at the Munich Security Forum and also in a group chat of officials about airstrikes in Yemen. Trump's provocations in the Western Hemisphere also could frustrate any joint anti-China front. A united North American trading powerhouse has long been seen as a potential bulwark against China, but Trump has repeatedly threatened to annex Canada and has targeted Mexico with some of his toughest tariffs. For months, Canadian politicians like Ontario Premier Doug Ford have been pleading with Trump to link up with Canada to combat China. Quote, "We also believe in the AMCAM fortress, working together to make the two strongest nations in the world. That's what we want to do," Ford told CNN's Wolf Blitzer on Thursday. But after weeks of attacks on Canada's sovereignty, Trump has made it impossible for its leaders to cooperate with the U.S., especially during the current general election campaign north of the border. New Prime Minister Mark Carney has warned that his country's traditional relationship with Washington is over. The idea of building an anti-China cooperative of U.S. allied powers isn't new. In fact, Trump has already shut it down once. On his first day in office, in his first term in 2017, Trump withdrew from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a group of 12 nations, including allies like Mexico, Canada, Japan, and Australia. And it says as well as Japan. I think that's perhaps a mistake there. The president also ended talks with Europe and on a transatlantic trade and investment partnership that would have linked the world's two largest markets. It may already be too late to change course. The U.S. right now, quote, "The U.S. right now is in an incredibly unreliable, is an incredibly unreliable partner to anyone in the world. And I don't know how we are going to get back to being reliable." Jason Furman, who chaired the Council of Economic Advisors in the Obama administration, told ISASOS on CNN International on Thursday. And that story on the possible outcomes of the current trade war between the United States and China, prepared, written by Stephen Collinson of CNN. And, of course, it is anyone's guess as to how the next 90 days are, in fact, going to pan out with respect to this current situation. It may have been that we've seen a stabilizing of sorts in terms of the stock markets and those investment platforms. But certainly there is still quite a lot of mistrust and uncertainty with respect to U.S. policy, U.S. development policy on a whole. And we got a very interesting point that was being made by a Nobel laureate by the name of Mr. Stiglitz. I think we've got that clip available, where he speaks to the fact that the Trump administration is somewhat behind in terms of its outlook regarding the U.S. economy. And that it's an economy that is far, far more dependent on that of services and not that of goods. So let's listen to Joseph Stiglitz at this time.
What is also clear is that Trump has no economic theory behind what he's doing. And I think that's most disturbing, both to me as an economist and to those who are on the other side in negotiations. I've talked to some of these people and they say, you know, we don't know how to negotiate because the other side is not a normal negotiator. You know, normally the other side knows what they want. There's a theory about how trade works. That's not true here. It's a different world. So let me give you an example. Trump thinks that trade deficits by themselves, and in particular trade deficits in goods, reflect somebody treating us unfairly. And it's based sort of on a premise that we are better than any other country, so people should be buying more goods from us than we are buying from them. But we are, in the 21st century, not where we were in 1950. Services are the major part of our economy. Goods production, manufacturing, is 9-10%. What are important? Service sector, tourism, education, health. What is he doing to those sectors? Look what he's done in the last few weeks. He's devastated our education system. The way his immigration people have treated those wanting to come into our country with valid passports, visas, has discouraged tourism. So he is hell-bent at hurting America's major export industry, tourism, and education. I've talked to firms that have thought about bringing manufacturing back to the United States. They say, we don't have the logistics, we don't have the supply chains that you need to bring complex manufacturing back. And modern manufacturing is robotic. So even if we brought manufacturing back, there are not going to be many jobs. So the reality is that his picture of bringing us back to the 1950s, that's never going to happen. But what's going to happen in the meanwhile? We're not going to be able to get those goods that Americans want. What is also clear is that Trump has no economic theory behind what he's doing. And I think that's most disturbing, both to me as an economist and to those who are on the other side in negotiations. I've talked to some of these people and they say, you know, we don't know how to negotiate because the other side is not a normal negotiator. You know, normally the other side knows what they want. There's a theory about how trade works. That's not true here. It's a different world. So let me give you an example. Trump thinks that...
Right. And that was Nobel Prize winner for economics, Joseph Stiglitz, speaking there regarding the challenges with the approach by the Trump administration on this entire matter of trade and what is being termed the global reset and the attempts to reindustrialize the United States of America. And of course, the point being made there that the U.S. economy has certainly diversified significantly over the years. And so when you look at it, really, manufacturing is about 11% of the entire economy. But there are other areas, like, for example, professional and business services. That represents nearly 13% of the U.S. economy. Healthcare, 8% of the U.S. economy, a significant share there. The IT sector is almost 6% of the U.S. economy. Finance is a whopping 21% of the U.S. economy. But you look at a sector like agriculture, for example, and believe it or not, although the U.S. is definitely a powerhouse when it comes to agricultural output, it really just represents 1% of its overall economy. And of course, the point being made is that with changes in technology, with the rise of technology in agriculture, we're not seeing, albeit there are fewer people who are working in, far, far, far fewer people who work in the agricultural sector in the United States. It is largely driven by mechanization, and its outputs have continued to grow. Still being able to produce far more food than what was being produced, say, 50 years ago. And that is being driven by technological innovation. The same can be said for a number of other sectors. And so just like in manufacturing, albeit you are seeing, still a lot of output, certainly in manufacturing. And the data said, I think, back in 2018, 2019, those were like the best years for the United States in terms of manufacturing output. So it's not like they're producing less overall. But the nature of manufacturing has changed, and you're seeing far more use of automation, far more use of robotics in the manufacturing processes. And so it's not going to be a sector where you're going to see a massive amount of people coming in and being employed in terms of what perhaps Mr. Trump is anticipating and expecting. And so there are a wide range of service-based sectors that are generating significant amounts of wealth for the United States. Entertainment, for example. And you think of how that as well has been exported all around the world. We spoke, of course, about Hollywood and that sector in itself in producing audiovisual entertainment. But it goes beyond that. When you look at the theme parks, in fact, just recently, the United Kingdom was boasting that it's going to be the first country in Europe to be hosting or to be able to have a Universal Studios theme park. And those are owned by American companies. They've been able to develop that sector significantly, of course, in places like Florida, in Orlando, elsewhere in the United States. But beyond that, they've been able to export this to the rest of the world. And so you have Disney theme parks in other parts of the world, Paris and in Asia and what have you. So certainly the U.S. economy is a far, far more diversified set of industries than what it was perhaps 100 or 200 years ago in the heyday when manufacturing would have been seen to be king. If that is perhaps going to be enough for Mr. Trump, well, we don't know. And of course, this continued battle with this hate of the success of China at this point could unfortunately lead to some significant catastrophe. Well, that's our program for today and, of course, for the week. And we do hope that we will have a very safe and blessed weekend. We'll be back, God willing, for another program on Monday. Of course, thanks to all those who have been listening and, of course, to all our viewers on Facebook Live as well. Wishing everybody a very happy weekend.